Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Whole world, and I think Chicago, because I think we have two great guests calling into our studio from Chicago, and I am Ilona Europa and Heather Gunn in a studio, and LA Talk Radio has great studios with four microphones. We wish our guests were there with us, here with us, but nope, they're calling from Chicago, but we still love you guys. Thank you for being with us on Accent On. Heather, maybe you'll introduce our guests.
Yes, I would love to. So today on the show, we have two great guests. We have David Mrazek and we have Joel Greenberg. Hi, guys.
Hello there.
Yay!
I'm really thankful that you guys are having us on your show.
How we could not. We have this great segment that is every fourth Monday of the month that is called It's the Wild World Out There. And both of you guys and your book and everything what you are doing, fitting so beautifully in everything what Heather loves to talk about. And I'm learning slowly, but I'm passionate about this topic also. Then welcome to the show, LA Talk Radio, Accent On, and our two great guests, Heather, introduction. Boom.
Yes, let me start with Joel. So Joel Greenberg, he's an author and naturalist. He has over 25 years of experience working on natural resource-related issues in the Midwest. He's currently a research associate of both the Chicago Academy of Sciences at the Peggy Notobart Nature Museum and the Field Museum. Those are both in Chicago. He has authored a number of books, including the most recent now available, A Feathered River Across the Sky, The Passenger Pigeon's Flight to Extinction. Welcome, Joel.
Well, thank you very much. As I said before, I'm glad. I wish I were in L.A. too.
Okay, but I know that I'm sure both of you will be one day, and we welcome to the studio. What I'm saying, today is this day, fourth Monday of the month, every month, that Ilona Europa and Heather Gunn, with her guests, we are very, very worrying what's going on in the world, and we are so worrying that animals, equally to people, need to survive somehow, somewhere, this crazy world out there. And you perfectly can introduce us to this topic, because we'll be talking today about a great book. The title is
A Feathered River Across the Sky.
Then we would love to know why this topic is very tragical, but why this topic and the book?
I've been interested in birds since the age of 12, and if you read about North American birds, especially if you have an interest in history, as I do, the passenger pigeon looms as a story unlike any other. It was abundant, they formed huge flocks, and they were wiped out in literally decades by people. And so its abundance is a testament to how rich the forests of eastern United States and Canada were, and its depletion in such a short time says a lot about us as people, probably, at least yeah, as we were back then.
Mm-hmm. You know what? But we have now book, and I think now we have a TV show that is right now produced also on this topic.
Yes, they have the documentary. Let me go ahead and introduce David.
Hi, David.
He is the writer.
Hello.
And, writer and producer of this. So David Mrazek, he's an award-winning producer and writer of numerous primetime PBS and cable TV documentary series. He holds an MFA in film production from USC right here in Los Angeles. And he recently produced From Billions to None, The Passenger Pigeon's Flight to Extinction, which is a compelling look at the forgotten story of an unbelievable, abundant, beautiful bird driven by humans to extinction in less than 50 years, and the serious human threats to species today. So we can talk about some of these issues, and
absolutely,
David, why you and how you got involved in this documentary, and did you even know what a passenger pigeon was before you met Joel?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, I did. I did know what a passenger pigeon was, but I didn't know anything really about the history and how quickly they were decimated. And I'll just step back. I directed the film, and Joel and I both co-produced and co-wrote it.
Okay, great.
I met Joel. I was interested in remnant prairies in the Chicago area and what the region used to be like, just blanketing and, you know, an ocean of grass that even a man on horseback couldn't see over. And Joel had written a wonderful book called The Natural History of the Chicago Region. And I looked him up, and we videotaped around various prairies, and he took me on personal tours. That didn't really go anywhere, but some of the footage from those forays has ended up in this film, and because it's all related. I mean, mm-hmm. habitat loss, species endangerment, it all goes together. But when Joel was writing his book, he asked me if he thought this might be an interesting topic for a documentary, and I said, absolutely. And I think it's turned out to be.
Because this is Accent On, this is the theme for our show. Obviously, I have funky accent. I am originally from Poland. And your name, I would love to a little bit find out. I think you have some European roots.
Yes, I do. Czech and Slovak, part of my
wow. Czechoslovakia.
Mostly Czech with a little bit of Slovak. Yeah.
Okay, then outside of beautiful, of course, pigeons, which we all love, and European people love them too, and it's symbol of peace, and we are just very attached to look of them. Now, your interest was very deeply involved with talking to everybody who is interested to saving our planet, that one of these birds will never, ever be back in this world.
Yes, and we do. What was interesting is while we were working on the film, this whole element of de-extinction kind of rose up, and this movement to bring back extinct species, and inevitably that needed to be a little bit of a part of the film, even if we brought back a hybrid passenger pigeon, which is really all you could do,
yeah.
it doesn't negate anything that, it doesn't change anything in terms of what we're doing to species around the world and what we're doing to the planet. But that was an interesting element that we did touch on.
And I don't know how to imagine what this documentary will be like, because the pigeon doesn't exist anymore. Okay, we have probably a lot of pictures, we have great book, we have all stories and explanation how this happened, and in 58 years, it's just they are not here anymore and never will be. And how did you both approach this project? And I understand the documentary is still in the making.
Oh, it's finished. We're just the final little touches. It's going to be uplinked by the National Education and Telecommunications Association. It's a third-party distributor to public television. They uplink it to public television stations across the country in late August, August 23rd, and then stations record it, and then we're pushing all programmers across the country to air it, and we're starting to get air dates in a variety of really great cities.
Wow.
And in Chicago and Seattle and various
LA.
Yeah, we're still waiting to hear from Los Angeles, but we're pretty hopeful.
I know that you finished USC. Yes, you have degree from USC also.
Oh yeah, I've lived almost 20 years in Los Angeles. After working in documentaries.
And it's amazing because you know my daughter also studied music business at USC, and maybe that's the bestest place to just both of you come to the school and talk to the students. Is this not something that would be amazingly appropriate and come back to your school and just do big kaboom with this topic and shake the children?
I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
I think so too. Then,
anybody. Do you know anybody at USC who's
yes,
in
my
a
daughter.
To bring a, no, bring a speaker in?
You know what? I don't believe that it's so hard. I will talk to my daughter, Natasha Amira, and we'll see. Maybe they can connect. Even documentary and film department can be very interested in this, especially that we have, of course, David, you know, who represents the school beautifully. Come on. I don't know. I'm dropping this off, and I believe when I say something out loud into the air, things are happening. Then... Yay! We'll be seeing you soon in LA. I know that.
But I would interject. You were asking about how do you visualize the story,
and I've worked with
some very talented animators, computer animators here in Chicago, and we've really. I mean, one of the real highlights of the program is recreating John James Audubon's experience in Kentucky in 1813, which he wrote very vividly about. And you really do experience a version of what it might have been like to have, you know, hundreds of millions of birds flying over you. So computer animation has really helped to bring this phenomenon back to life.
David and Jewel, you know, in a way, most of us saw Birds, the movie, and obviously it's very scary, you know, and remembering seeing not so many birds flying around our heads, but seeing millions of pigeons in one time and then, you know, darkness that really overcome the sky. This probably in a movie, in documentary, will be looking just amazingly. The powerful, you know, look of that and dynamics and movement and winds and everything what I read, you know, trying to find out more about book, that would be fascinating. And I cannot wait because animation right now, yes, is so close to reality that I'm almost scared right now. But really, we are talking about death of these birds, you know, death in the very crazy way. And we are talking about how really people got them closer to being extinct right now. And could you tell us a little bit that our listeners can find out what was really happening that 50 years took so short time to just...
Joel, why don't you...
Yes,
sure.
Joel,
yeah,
you know
and,
better.
Yeah,
yes?
And maybe if Joel can even touch on, like, why were these birds so unique and, you know, what led to their extinction?
Sure. In my view, there were three things about the bird that made them... unique, to use Heather's word. First, again, their abundance. They were certainly the most abundant bird in eastern Canada and the United States. There were probably billions of them. Secondly, they aggregated in huge concentrations. So John Audubon, in the account that David referred to, said that in one three-day period along the Ohio River in Kentucky, they eclipsed the sun for 3 days. And during that time, he said the droppings fell like snowflakes. So that's sort of another aspect of the bird. And third, there was a report in 1860 near Toronto of a flight of birds that probably exceeded 2 billion birds, 1860.
Ouch.
40 years later, the last wild birds were killed. The very last one was killed in 1902 that we know of. I mean, we're never going to know the exact date of the last. But what we do know with great certainty is the last of the species. And it's rare. Heather's done a lot of work at the zoos. And, I mean, it's rare that even in zoos that we know the date of the last of a species. But in this case, Martha, a female passenger pigeon who spent most of her life in the Cincinnati Zoo, died around 1 o'clock in the afternoon on September 1st, 1914. So this year is the centenary of that extinction. And I think when I started working on my book in 2009, that the impending anniversary really, you know, helped make the story more current. And a growing, a fairly large number of people now, I mean, see this as a way to show the messages that are in that story, the lessons that are in that story, that we can't, that just because something is abundant doesn't mean that we can't wipe it out. There are now 7 billion people on the planet, and there are current examples similar to what happened to the pigeon. So it's important not just as history, as powerful as that history is, it's also important because it has these very relevant messages for today.
Why do you think nobody cared to stop this process? Why do you think people missed this moment, and somehow, somewhere, nobody did anything about that?
Well, part of it, you have to go back and realize this was in the 19th century. This bird had been very abundant. There were no federal laws controlling what went on. There was an industry that made up things, and one might argue that there are similarities to today. When people are confronted with inconvenient truths, one way to deal with it is you pretend those truths don't exist. And so when at the very end, even in the 1880s, when people started noticing that the birds were getting scarce, the industry actually said, oh, don't worry about it. You know, the birds nest multiple times a year. The fact is they nest once a year. They produce one egg a year. Others said, well, the birds fled to California. Or some even said they went down to Colombia, South America, and changed their appearance so we couldn't find them. People simply made things up. Another aspect of this is they did concentrate in flocks. So even as late as 1882, which was the last year that they nested at any numbers, there were maybe a few million in Wisconsin and 1 million or so in Pennsylvania, you could say, truthfully, oh, look, there's a big flock in Wisconsin. But what that ignores is that just 4 years before, there were probably 60 million birds. So it was a combination of ignorance, a combination, you know, of this industry, and, you know, times were different, and there just wasn't the techniques, there wasn't the interest or resources to do any careful study of the bird. Indeed, the bird was never studied in life. I think to answer your question, you kind of have to try to drag yourself back. Although, having said that, what's going on, we discussed this in the film, what's happening in the fishing in the open seas, pelagic fishing with shark and tuna, that's happening right now, but it's in international waters, so no country, no sovereign can control it. Mm-hmm. And the kind of depletion of the seas is really horrifying, and as David Blockstein says in the movie, we do not today have the excuse of ignorance.
Right. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the positive part of our conversation, that maybe people are doing something. People like you, for sure, are doing something in that and bringing awareness to the horrible situation, that we really can stop or change the world, or we can just close our ears and eyes saying, oh, I don't know, nothing like bad like that is not happening around us. Mm-hmm. But I would love to play a little tiny bit of music from your documentary. It's called Morning Running, and we'll take a tiny little break. Please stay on the line with us. Let's listen and just calm ourselves down a little bit. Thank you. obvious music plays big role in your documentary, I think.
I'm sorry?
I was saying that probably music plays a big role in your movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I worked with, well, there were three different musician composers. That one was a South Korean fellow who lives here in Chicago, Enoch Kim. And the music isn't composed for the film because this was a low budget affair. We raised the bulk of our funding from crowdfunding, which was a really fantastic experience. But I found musicians who were willing to let me use their music and basically edit to it as if it was scored. So I would edit instead of the usual, which is you edit a film and then give it to the composer and he composes it. I was kind of doing the reverse. And I also worked with a really talented composer musician named Garth Stevenson, and then our end credits are a wonderful composition written by a guy out here at the Old Town School of Folk Music, Paul Doty, who took a bit of a rhyme that Joel found, 18th century rhyme. If I could shoot my rifle clear at pigeons in the skies, I'd say farewell to pork and beans and live on pigeon pies. Mm. And he added verses to it, and it runs in our end credits, and it's just really wonderful with fiddle and banjo. And
oh, David and Joel, when in the future you have any problems with music, please call Ilona Europa. I'm working with many amazing composers, and I'm saying many, many amazing composers who I'm sure will be more than happy to give their music or time to this type
you.
Of project. And I'll be playing a little bit later, little funky, crazy music, maybe a little similar to something in the future they will be doing about African animals. And you never know, but yeah, I don't know if you wanted to add something to the music question of mine.
That one thing we didn't want the music to be ponderous, and we didn't want it to be a downer, because this is such a downer of a story.
Yes.
You could get mired in depression, and we wanted to still give a sense of hope that
Absolutely.
We can learn from this event from 100 years ago. We can try to change what we're doing, and so we don't have to have this just be a dirge where we're recounting the death of Martha, September 1st, 1914. And so that music you just played,
yeah.
You know, that's, you know, obviously we had, the music varies throughout, but we didn't want to have it be, because just kind of, too overwhelming and kind of a
gentle
kind of sad
and peaceful
way.
And but yeah, for sure is not very dark. That's beautiful. Heather, I know Heather Gunn, I know this is what you love to do, this is what you're studying. It's a wild world out there. We met again after a few years not seeing each other, and I know your passion for animals, for everything what is going on around the world, and now you brought this beautiful guest to our studio. I will leave more questions into your hands, because I know you are very prepared for this interview. Then please start asking.
Yeah, I want to also touch on something that David just said. You know, with endangered species list right now, you know, the industry, if you will, is trying to go towards more of like a green list versus a red list of these bad things. So it's bad news versus good news. So you want to build on good news. So the idea behind this passenger pigeon project and the documentary in Joel's book is to look at how we can learn from this. What's the positive side of it? What's the silver lining? So there is hope. It's like with the mountain gorilla. There are now 880 in the wild. That's a 3% population increase in the last year. I don't know if David or Joel want to touch on this, but like the de-extinction issue and the biotechnology that's readily available now to bring back some of these species from the brink of extinction, or bring them back all together in some way.
Well, the work that, one way to look at it is to see it as a continuum. So at the most spectacular end of the continuum, you bring back a species. And then on the other side, the genetic research, and this is particularly true with passenger pigeons because we know so little about them, we can learn more. There was a paper just published, for example, 4 weeks ago looking at the genetics of passenger pigeons, and they determined that over the millions of years of the bird's existence, their populations fluctuated greatly. I mean, that's an insight that we didn't know with certainty. And then in between is the idea that there are animals, and Heather, you may know the exact, I think it's a southern black rhino. There's a handful in captivity, all descended from a single male. So one idea is to take DNA from specimens and somehow introduce that into this tiny living population to increase their genetic background, thereby enhancing their chances of surviving. So that technology can do some positive things, even if we never quite get to de-extinction. So that's one aspect of it.
Okay.
Yeah, very interesting. I would love to also, obviously, I am not an expert, but I am an observer, and I love everything what is around us, and I'm reading, and now being on the radio with this topic with Heather, obviously my eyes are like, you know, looking for the topic like that. And today I just saw article that says in LA Talk Radio ABC just said the Caltrans announced plans to build a bridge that would help mountain lions safely cross the 101 freeway in Agoura Hills. And no, this is not about birds, but also it's amazing because they've biologists are worried that animals are inbreeding because they are cut off from other mountains, lions, and obviously it is public safety, and also, you know, the same situation. We got some problems there, and it's next to me. I'm living in Agoura Hills. I don't want to say hi to lion in the morning, you know, and I love lions, but boy, you know, there are plus and minuses. People say, no, don't do this, $2 million. Why do we need to do this? But on the other hand, problem, you know, and next movie. Okay, guys, we need to talk about this. Agoura,
well, I wouldn't worry. I would be a lot more concerned when I drive than I would about being attacked by a mountain lion. I mean, it's been known to happen, but not very often. And, you know, what you just said about the bridge, I mean, it shows that attitudes have changed. And, in fact, to my way of thinking, I mean, the loss of the pigeon, along with the decimation of bison and other things in 19th century, helped spawn the country's first great environmental movement of the late 1800s and early 1900s. And out of that movement came laws, particularly the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which we still use as a centerpiece for how we protect birds in this country. So the loss of the pigeon did have sort of a silver lining. I mean, it did touch people, and it did cause actions. And then as time went on, decades elapsed, and we no longer slaughter birds in this country like we did in the 19th century. But we learned that there are other things we are doing which are also causing animals and plants to become rare or extinct, and that's things like habitat loss and pollution. And that helped lead to the country's second great environmental movement of the 1970s, and that in turn led to laws like the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act. Clean Water Act is an important reason that bald eagles are expanding. They've tried a nest within the city limits of Chicago for the first time in recorded history. And the Endangered Species Act, which is a pledge that this country made that we would not allow species to become extinct in our borders, at least not without a fight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so those are some of the positive aspects that have come.
Lovely. And again, you know, it's just amazing that we all talk about this when, like I said, next to my place, we have lions who just have issues and people are afraid of that. We have millions of dollars probably we'll put into helping them to find each other. Hopefully we'll make good things. And we are talking about lions in Agoura Hills. Then I would like to play music because that's what Accent On is. We always are moving from the topic to the music. And yeah, this is Ilona Europa and Jerry Jones, Step Into the Culture. And it's a little bit more about lions and giraffes, but that could be next track for your movies, guys. Okay.
Okay.
That was dramatic. Okay, and now I would like to again ask Heather, because I know she has a few more questions to both of you guys. Heather, what is the next one?
Well, I just also just want to make a comment on how unique it is to combine all these different types of media, like Joel and David. They have, you know, Joel has his book and they created the documentary together. And when I first met Joel at a nature center in Chicago at the Ryerson Center, their theme for the year was to merge science and art. So this book is a form of art. The documentary is a form of art. And then your music, you know, everything, you know, touches people in different ways. So it's, you know, it's just an amazing resource and just capable of connecting so many individuals throughout the world, anywhere in the world.
Absolutely.
And present them with unique information, ideas, and feelings that they may never have otherwise been exposed to.
And I really think, guys, if you create some nice letter, and we will be having Write Me and Heather to go to USC, I would love to, just with my daughter who is studying there, then I would love to talk to them, and we'll see what we can do. We can bring some amazing artists, you know, do some great music that is really very similar to what the message is about, and some great effects, video effects, plus if we can play the documentary. That would be amazing, amazing event. And obviously, myself and Heather, we have a plans to create few events is around
we
this topic, too. We have a big plans. And, you know, the most important is to start one. Doesn't need to be very big, but we'll turn into something really like movement. Why not? Then, Heather, if you would like to, because you didn't have really any actors, yes, in a documentary. This is only animation, and I would like to know a little bit more about this documentary. What we can expect?
Well, it's a interweaving Joel's journey or evangelizing. You know, Joel is incredibly passionate, as you've heard.
Yeah,
and it's his kind of his journey through this historical event, what he's learned about it, and bringing it to young people. We have a variety of young people in the program. We have colleagues of his, we have scientists, we have artists, interwoven with marine biologist Boris Worm in Nova Scotia, who's done a lot of research on sharks and how much, just how incredibly the sharks are being hunted for their fins to just to create shark fin soup. Not, you know, they're not even really necessarily being fished for their whole bodies. And we interweave that with the story of the pigeon, with some animation. We do have some, you know, as I mentioned, we have a wonderful actor, voice actor, who actually did the reading of Joel's book for I guess you don't say books on tape anymore. They're not on tape.
Yes.
Or the audio Andy, version of the book.
The audio version of his book. Andy Kaplow. He's the voice of John James Audubon. And my daughter even makes a little appearance reading the rhyme, the passenger pigeon rhyme. But we interweave it with the history and present day issues. And it all kind of comes together.
Beautiful. And how long is the movie?
It's an hour, just a little under an hour.
Wow. Okay, do we need to read a book before we see the movie to educate ourselves? Because I want to pitch the book. We need to go to Amazon. Yes, is this the best way to just purchase book through Amazon?
Is that your chosen method, Joel?
The book can be the book can be obtained through, you know, Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, Indie Bound. It could be, you know, purchased through bookstores. Bloomsbury is the publisher. So, you know, the book could be obtained in the regular ways. The paperback is coming out in you know, I don't know, by the beginning of September. And so the book has done pretty well. It's the first book I've done that is meant for a national audience, and I've been quite pleased by you know, the interest that's received.
Absolutely. You know, is this something so gorgeous that parents can read to the children? You know, is this something like we could do something bigger with that? It could be part of, you know, just learning what the world was like and what we can, you know, do about that, these issues. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us again the title of the book, Heather, and again spell the name of the author?
It's Joel Greenberg. Joel's last name is spelled G-R-E-E-N-B-E-R-G. The book is called A Feathered River Across the Sky, The Passenger Pigeon's Flight to Extinction.
Beautiful. Everybody go straight to Barnes & Noble.
And the DVD isn't ready just yet, but the DVD would be available for purchase in a few weeks. I would say check the end of August, actually, from billionstonone.com.
Wow.
Or actually, billionstonone.com.
We want to get one first. Heather, put this on our calendar, and we will be this pigeon running around talking about this great topic. I would like to have like 7-6 minutes left before end of the show, because I'm always closing with some another music. But did we miss something? Do we need to talk to people about something? Can we like reach people's pockets and just give you guys money for something next? You know, that's what we do. This is Accent On. This is an amazing radio station, LA Talk Radio. You know, we can just say whatever we want. Nobody watches. Nobody censors us. It's just beautiful freedom. And I want to be feeling free to give you guys, you know, just 2 minutes to pitch anything that you want that will help with next project, this project, or who is supposed to call you, find you, talk to you, all of these things. What would be the best message?
I would like to say, and we try to, this near the end of the film, we try to get this across, that people need to not think that they're helpless to do anything. And if you can't think that, oh, I'm just one voice, or it's kind of like voting, oh, I'm just one vote. No, you're all combined. You're more than just one vote. And for people to do just locally, you can do things. I mean, it's as simple as composting. You know, you can reduce the amount of stuff you put in your trash by having some kind of a compost bin in the backyard. Or if you live in an apartment, you could actually compost, you know, in a box with earthworms. I know it sounds a little weird, but you can be creative, and there are just things you can do. And I know we all recycle, but maybe we don't all recycle as much as we can, but just there are things you can do on a local level. And one of our biologists says, Stan Temple says in the film, join an organization that supports what you want, you know. So I would just say, don't think that you don't matter. I mean, you can make a difference.
And I'm hoping all zoos and the schools they will receive, or they will find a way how to get your DVD and how to just talk to the young children, because I really believe that's what is our responsibility. We need to talk to youth and teach them.
Well, the movie, as David said, certainly includes young people. And I would just sort of echo what David said is, you know, whatever your interest. I mean, so Heather and I like animals. And so if you like wild animals, you can do citizen science, do Christmas bird counts, count frogs. If you like children, volunteer at your local museum or nature center. If you like to sit for hours at contentious meetings, there's groups that can use you. If your passion is eating Twinkies in front of a TV, I haven't quite figured out your role, but I'm sure there is one. So really, at least vote for, consider what, there's some pretty differing opinions out there on how we should treat our planet. And so if you care, think about what each candidate thinks about it, and proceed accordingly.
And to just throw out, we do talk about how the Endangered Species Act was, eventually an outgrowth out of Martha dying in the Cincinnati Zoo. Mm-hmm. The Endangered Species Act is endangered right now with a lot of special interest groups. And in California, with the incredible drought you're having, there are issues with water and with certain fish species that are, needing water versus ranchers. And while there are, Democrats in Congress feel, okay, we need to fine-tune elements of the Endangered Species Act to deal with things like the drought and how, yes, you need water to grow things, but there are those who want to just use it as an excuse to decimate the Endangered Species Act. Mm-hmm. And so people need to, figure out what is their congressman or senator, how do they feel about this, and, make their voices known.
Yeah, you know what? I have another genius idea. Oh boy, my head is spinning right now. And we are watching with children movies about dinosaurs. Why not make like tiny little star and make our passenger pigeon to being like star? And, you know, create animated movie that talks to the children, tiny little children, and just save the world. But, you know, if it's something that is not existing and we make this back through, you already have probably a very nice way of proving that we still can see and feel this bird, you know, through your documentary, but create a storyline that is like just maybe beautiful and romantic and unusual and just, you know, all how they try to survive, how really people, you know, try to, I don't know, kill them. And we had all these lines, telephone lines, and you know, just it's a dramatic, it's almost like a story, movie, dramatic storyline.
Joel? Yes? Joel can speak to that. There's actually a variety of books that have been written about the passenger pigeon, a children's book, Joel.
Look at you.
Yeah, there's right now, the Ohio Historical Society in Columbus has a book on a children's book on passenger pigeons. The Indiana State Museum has written a play, a 15-minute play for children dealing with passenger pigeons.
Wow.
I know of some other children's books as well. Here's something you'd love, Ilona. In Toronto, to mark the millennium in 2000, they brought in artists to work with the school children. The children made origami passenger pigeons, and then there was a huge parade down Lakeshore Boulevard in downtown Toronto called the Flight of the Pigeons. You had hundreds of kids holding up their paper pigeons.
I love it.
Stunning image.
That's the sweetest way of getting to children's hearts, and it just make them aware of that, you know, tomorrow, one of these animals that we pet today or just look into the sky, maybe we'll never see it again. You know, just beautiful. But I still believe you are right. Books, then I thought I was genius, but it looks like somebody did this already. We have all these things that you said about. Now we really need a cute, tiny movie. Tiny for children, animation movie, right after.
Well, can I mention one other thing I almost forgot? There's a high school teacher in Elgin, Illinois. Heather knows where that is. It's northwest of Chicago. But she's doing a national teach-in day in the first week in September, biodiversity teaching. So if there are any teachers listening, all you have to do is call in, and you can, there are experts available throughout like a week talking about different aspects of biodiversity, and your school kids can, I think, there's the means to communicate with these experts. So that's another way for school kids
to be exposed. We need to post this link. Yes, please, if you can send to Heather, we'll put on Accent On, we'll put on our separate It's a Wild World page on Facebook. And like I said, you never know when we'll be having our documentary in my hands and Heather's hands. We'll start, you know, like I say, spread the news. And I have this dream that USC will make this big on the campus for young students, and then maybe public schools and something, because a school system needs stuff like that, something new, something unusual, something really shaking children's hearts, you know, and making them aware of all this instinct. And can you give me this English beautiful word for animals who are not anymore on our planet?
Extinct.
That's what hard is to say, you know, with my funky accent. I love you guys. Heather, I know you have some questions, yes, that you would like to ask?
Yes, if we have time.
I just wanted
you guys to maybe touch on Project Passenger Pigeon as a whole, being that you hope to use all sorts of media to engage as many people as possible. And I think that's, you know, the direction you're headed towards with what you've already accomplished.
So what's I'm missing? Project Passenger Pigeon was created in February of 2011, and we brought people together in Chicago. And now there's over 160 organizations involved, and I keep getting new correspondences, people from all over the world. I mean, at one point there was a guy with an art museum in the Cameroons in West Africa wanted to participate. So Project Passenger Pigeon has sort of been the umbrella for a lot of these projects. And one project, and this goes to what Ilona was talking about, there's a really neat lady named Cheryl Biggestaff Cuneo, who is a teacher or works with teachers in Los Angeles, and they've created an extinction quilt, like modeled after the AIDS quilt, with passenger pigeons and other things on it as well. So people have just picked up the idea and have run with it.
That's another link we need to have. You know, I don't know. Let's just feel that this is just the beginning. And to be, again, sure, you said that on the 23rd of August, we will be having probably DVD ready for purchase around this date?
Yeah, just to be safe, we'll just say the end of August. You know, let's say September 1st, actually.
Mm-hmm. Marking
when Martha died 100 years ago.
And you said that is some cool event that will be produced around this topic. Is something outside of a DVD being published or ready to buy? Do we do something more?
There is not one organized event. Lots of institutions are doing things. Cincinnati, the documentary will be aired on September 1st. The cage or the facility that Martha spent her life in Cincinnati is going to be redone. In Chicago at the Notabart Nature Museum, there are events. You can do a selfie with a passenger pigeon. And different institutions are the Smithsonian, which actually has Martha. They have events scheduled. So there are lots of events scheduled. Many of them are on the calendar of Project Passenger Pigeon, the website. And I'm sure that a lot of things are going to be going on that, frankly, I won't even know about because it's, pretty neat.
Yep, people just have, the beginning.
As we get closer, people have learned about it. People have thought about it. And there's a host of cool things going on.
Maybe because we are almost ready to end our show. Could you give us, like you say, selfie? That was beautiful. Now you say, okay, I want to know how this bird looks very fast. We are talking about this bird who is not anymore here. If you can describe in a few words how...
Sure.
Yes.
It looked like a mourning dove. I call it, in the book, I say it looks like a mourning dove on steroids. It was bigger than a mourning dove. Mourning doves are the common wild pigeon of eastern U.S., but, they have a pretty broad range. They have a pointed tail with white on the ends. Passenger pigeons had that, too. The males, though, were more brightly colored underneath. They were rusty color, copper colored. They were blue-gray on the back with a fluorescent nape. So if people know what mourning doves look like, they have a pretty good sense of what passenger pigeons look like.
Okay, that's beautiful. Heather, one more time, if you can introduce our guest for today's show before we'll say bye-bye. And I still believe this is just the beginning because for whatever reason, I believe maybe October we all will meet here, in USC. I don't know why, but let's feel and just dream. Why not? Okay, Heather, one more time. Book name is?
Book name is A Feathered River Across the Sky, The Passenger Pigeon's Flight to Extinction by Joel Greenberg. And we also have From Billions to None, which was co-produced by David Mrazek and Joel Greenberg.
Thank you guys so much. And I would like to end our show always on a high energy because that's what my music is. This is my radio show and not mostly. I play a lot of my music, but of course I play somebody else's music too. But today we'll be finishing it with a song called Eternal Kiss by Ilona Europa and UK Club Junkies. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you so much, Jewel. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you, David.
And all these links that we talk about, please send to Heather and I will be publishing, okay?
All right.
That's great.
Thank you.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.